Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. My conservative friend, Henry Hollingshead, is back in the studio with me this morning.
Ron, glad to be here.
Absolutely. You are a stand-in this week, my friend.
Well, hey, listen, anytime I can get up and take a victory lap, I'm more than happy to do it. So I'm here. I'm ready.
Well, you know, we were going to address some of the holiday issues surrounding Christmas and, of course, some folks that are homeless and folks who are hungry out there. And one of my guests will be on next week. And so she had to cancel. So you are, again, my stand-in. And it's always good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. It really is.
Absolutely. We had a lot of stuff going on in the news, of course. As you know, the memorial for Nelson Mandela was held this week, and President Obama gave a rousing speech. There were plenty of dignitaries there to memorialize Nelson Mandela. His body lied in state on Friday, and he will be buried, actually transported to his home village tomorrow morning in the southeastern part of the country. Any thoughts? You did send me a text late last week indicating that Nelson Mandela indeed passed.
Yeah, I was sorry to see him go. He had been extremely ill for a long time, but he really, in his life, accomplished so much more than anybody, practically anybody that ever lived, when you think about it. Years ago, there was a book called Cry Beloved Country.
Oh, yeah.
And it was about South Africa. Mm-hmm. And it was obviously before Nelson Mandela and everything that happened. Well, if you read that book and then see the difference between what it was actually like there mm-hmm. then and how Mandela had changed. And figuring he spent 30 years in prison.
27
years in prison.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things that amazed me, and I don't know if politics is playing too much of a role in how we view individuals. As you know, Newt Gingrich was attacked. Ted Cruz even got some attacks from his own folks indicating that they were upset with him for making some kind remarks about Nelson Mandela. Any thoughts on that?
That's ridiculous. Sometimes in life, people rise above politics.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill, Nelson Mandela, actually even Martin Luther King Jr., these people rose above politics.
Right.
They tried to put their views out to the public, and they were the right views, and to mock somebody or to say that they weren't doing what they should have done, that's terrible. It brings down the other side.
Sure.
Because whenever there is greatness, you have to applaud greatness in any form.
Now, what if, of course, there might be a perspective that the man wasn't great. I happen to believe that he was. I happen to believe that he helped to change the course of South Africa, as you do. I happen to believe that he helped to change the dialogue in the world.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you consider, you know, even when we hearken back to when Ronald Reagan was in office, and he wasn't a star-worth proponent of the divestment movements that was going on at that time. In fact, there was legislation even trying to prevent him from even coming out of jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing is this, is views change as time goes by.
Absolutely.
When Nelson Mandela went into jail, he was known as a sincere, hardcore militant.
Yeah.
And the 30 years in jail, you don't want to say 30 years in jail helped anybody. I mean, let's get grown up here. But he had time to really get his thoughts and his organization together. And so when he came out of prison, he was so much more rounded than he was when he went in. It's a great story. It's a fabulous story. And anybody that mocks someone like that, like what he did, don't. I mean, if you are just solid, practically a KKK member, and you think, oh, this is ridiculous, you have to realize that this man was great.
Well, I think we are all products of our time. And I do think that when we reflect upon the history of South Africa and some of the absolute degradation the South African, black South African people were experiencing, some of the absolute torture that were going through and how they responded, how black South Africans responded to oppression, responded to the apartheid regime, you can understand a Nelson Mandela taking a tactful position because of course, initially, there was a peaceful protest. There was a peaceful response to what the kinds of oppression that the apartheid regime was inflicting. But when Nelson Mandela, his cohorts, and the ANC, and all of those folks who were rising up against that kind of oppression, when they saw that the South African government and the apartheid regime was starting to become more and more and more brutal, they had to change tactics. And there had to be a more regressive or aggressive response to what they were experiencing.
I can't argue one way or another. I mean, I haven't studied
you
the thing.
You don't argue with me?
I don't know if you're right or wrong. I honestly believe you're right. But the one thing about Nelson Mandela that stands to me above everything else is when he came out of prison, you're absolutely right. If he would have gone vindictive, South Africa would have burned down.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they would have taken this thing down.
Yeah,
because less than 10% held 95% of the wealth.
That's right.
If the 95% says, we're taking it, they're taking it.
And there would have been much more bloodshed in that country.
Oh, it would have been because you couldn't have gotten the financing.
Sure.
You couldn't have rebuilt the place. It would have turned into like Monrovia.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been an absolute disaster. And I have to give some credit, definitely, to a guy by the name of Leclerc. Leclerc. He was the white guy in charge of this thing. I don't know how. He was the president, but he was elected by 5% of the people.
Well, but understand, though. I mean, de Klerk didn't come to his position by happenstance.
There was
a movement around the globe responding to the kinds of oppression that the South African people were experiencing. So he was forced, just as Reagan was forced, to do some of the things. And I find it interesting. You know, I differ radically with Newt Gingrich. But when you look at the history of Newt Gingrich on this issue alone, you can tell that the man at least has some. He thought it out. Yeah, he thought it out. Absolutely,
he's a very intelligent man. Like him or not, Newt Gingrich is a very intelligent man. And when he thinks something out,
if
he thinks it out the way you agree with him, then you have to agree with
him. Yeah, it is interesting, Henry. One of the things that as we consider what is going on in this holiday season, there are a lot of folks who are hungry out there. There are a lot of folks who are homeless. What do you think our nation should do, apart from the political machinations that goes on in this country? What should our country be doing to respond to the abject poverty that many people are experiencing in this country?
I have a little bit different view than most people.
Sure.
I think that the one thing that we have to do that is holding every poor person back is education.
Yeah, I agree.
I believe that there are so many people that really our school system and our libraries, I believe, should practically go 24/7 so the children can have a place to be safe, get them off the streets, give them they have YMCAs and stuff like that, but I'm talking a real study type of situation. And I think that the government, actually the smart way to do it is to pay for grades. Try and raise the schools, and then the better the grade, you pay the kid. By doing this, it shows that learning will make you money.
There's some incentive.
There's so many people that they learn and they say, well, I'm not going anywhere. Nobody around here has got a job. Maybe I'll finish. Maybe I won't. Who cares? I think if you started to pay people for grades and started to really work, I think you have to get rid of the unions. I'm serious. I really do. I think you have to get rid of the unions. I think you have to break down our school system extremely locally, get the federal government out of it, have testing all the time. Testing. If you do not test. I mean, look, if you're going to have your liver taken out or your kidney taken out, you want the guy to have a test.
This
idea of no tests is ridiculous. And I think that we should really put our money in education, because that's the only way. Look, our generation is handing these kids a mess. The only way they're ever going to figure it out if they're smart enough to do it. Mm-hmm. I got to give them an education. It's the only thing we have left.
Yeah. Well, I disagree, obviously, with the issues of unions, because, you know, coming from the North, the unions were so prominent where I am from, and I certainly appreciate the leadership of the unions in certain instances. And obviously, we'll disagree with some of the positions that the unions take, but I do believe that they serve a great purpose. When you consider, for instance, pay raises, or when you consider days off, or when you consider vacations, or a whole panoply of different things that happens when a person goes to work, the unions play a huge role in making sure that there is some parity in terms of the different classes, those kinds of things. I think the unions play a role in making sure that those folks who are punching a clock, working 40 hours a week, that there is fairness in terms of how they are getting paid, in terms of how they are getting their vacations, the whole thing. That's where I am on the unions.
I disagree with you. I think that the unions in the beginning were definitely needed. Absolutely. The coal mining unions, the UAW, these types of things, yes, you did need unions. Absolutely. I think Walmart should be unionized. But I think the teachers union is an absolute travesty. I really do. Yeah, I really do. If nothing else, the union should scream for a safe working environment.
The
thing that kills me about this country, all right, is we look at these lists. They say, oh, we're 17th on the list on how we educate our children.
We're
23rd.
We are.
Because we try to educate all the children. Everybody else educates 5 to 10%. And what happens,
are you saying that we shouldn't be educating all of our children?
No, what I'm saying is that the grading is skewed. If we took our 10% and put it against the world's 10%, we would be right there. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we include the other 90%. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I'm saying that when you look at these records and the union always screams, oh, we're so far behind, we're not teaching properly. We are. The problem is the pool is so big. I mean, the difference between you take a kid, all right, and put them in a private school, let's just say a private Catholic school where they have to wear uniforms, there's discipline, and this type of thing, and you take that same kid and you put him in a ghetto school, I will guarantee you he will do better in the other school, in the Christian school, and it's what we have to do.
Well, I disagree. I do think that the public school systems in our country serve a great purpose. They are educating our children. Yes, we are falling behind, but I think that there are structural issues that we need to address. I don't think having the perspective that, you know, 5% or extracting 5% and concentrating on them is an appropriate route to go. Every child in this country deserves a quality education, and I think if we're going to spend the resources, whether it's in the ghetto or whether it's in private schools, my point is that every child deserves a quality education, and we should be putting our resources to making sure that those kids are graduating and that they have promise in their lives.
I agree with you 100%.
Well, let's move on then. I, again, want to go back to the point, though, of how do we address the immediate problems of folks who are on the street today in Charlotte? What should the city of Charlotte, what should the country do to help individuals who are on the streets right now?
Well, we know the system is broken. That much we do know. And so we have to figure out a different way of going about this. One thing that we should do is, I think that we should go through and find out who really needs the help.
Yeah.
I think that we should have drug testing. I think that we should.
Let me stop you there. Should the drug testing be across the board? I just don't think identifying individuals who perhaps might be poor and need assistance, but we don't give that same scrutiny to individuals who might be making $150,000 a year,
right?
But
okay,
they are also doing some things that are salacious themselves.
Absolutely, but I'm not paying the $150,000 guy.
But if you're subsidizing that individual's
corporation, if
you are giving him tax breaks and giving them subsidies, you are. The government is subsidizing. That is the unfairness of the system. You have a situation, Henry, where a corporation will get tax breaks, they will get subsidies, and the individuals who are running those multi-million dollar companies, they are not given the same scrutiny as the individual who might be getting some subsidies from the government who happen to be poor. We're talking about equality here.
Right. And this is the equality that I look at. The company has earned the tax breaks. The company is paying people. The company is putting money back into society.
Well,
in their taxes, no matter what the rate is, they're putting some money back into society. They're employing people. They're paying insurance. I mean, they are part of society. What I'm saying is when the tax bill comes and I have to pay my taxes, and my taxes go directly to someone who does not have a job, that is not working, that is not putting anything into the economy, I think I have the right to say that that man cannot use recreational drugs.
Okay, here's the deal, though. Okay, that
presupposes
that the individual who perhaps might be on unemployment didn't work a day in his life, or it wasn't working, or attempting to find a job. And see, that's where this thing is unfair.
Right.
Because now you're stereotyping individuals who might have worked their tail off, taking the bus to work every single day, literally working 80 hours a week, traveling 10, 15, 20 miles outside of their home. And because of the collapse of the economy, or because something happened in that person's life, now he finds himself out of luck, out of job. And now all of a sudden you have some person in office saying, well, because you weren't working, we need to test you just to make sure that you're not taking recreational drugs. But never mind the fact that that man may have been working all his life, working his tail off. That's where this thing is unfair, Henry.
When he was working his tail off, Ron,
if the job
he could do any drugs he wants. I don't care. The difference is I'm not paying for it.
But the point is, Henry, if you are willing to pay subsidized individuals who happen to be running multi-million dollar corporations and they are taking recreational drugs, but you don't apply the same standard to individuals who might be down on their luck, that's what I call a problem. That's not equality, Henry.
See, equality to me is who is paying.
But in both instances, you're paying.
No, I'm not.
Henry, if your tax dollars is subsidizing a company to be able to expand their business, you are subsidizing that company. And all I'm saying to you, Henry, is I want you to apply the same standard. If that company is giving tax breaks or some kind of subsidy, I want that CEO to make sure that he is getting the same kind of drug testing, following the same standards as an individual who might be down on their luck.
All right, so let me see if I understand this right. If the president of United States Steel cuts a deal to save 5,000 jobs and keep things going, you believe, and so he pays, let's say he makes $6 million, he pays $1.5 million in taxes, the rest of it he hides, he only pays $1 million in taxes, whatever he makes, he gets a golden parachute, he makes a ton of money, all right? He makes a ton. You honestly believe that he should be at the same stand, he should, if he wants to buy drugs with his $1 million, it's up to him. It's not up to me.
Well,
he's got his money.
Okay.
Look, all I'm saying is if the man that's working 80 hours a day, all right, he's busting his stones. He's working. He's traveling. I don't care what he does on his time off. I don't care if he gets on the bus with a hookah. I don't care.
What's a hookah? You mean a hookah?
That's what you smoke marijuana. But I'm just saying, I don't understand. I don't understand how you can put the two of them together. Here's the other thing. You say, what should we do? This is what we should do. It will help. If you took every single person that is getting drugs, that is buying drugs with government money, they're getting a welfare check, they're going and buying drugs. If you stop that, you could take that money and give it to people that really need it.
Well, I understand your point about giving money to individuals who need it, who deserve it, who absolutely require it. I understand that. But again, what I want in terms of standards is applying standards to both sides. All I'm saying, and I'll try to be as calm and rational as I can at this point, all I'm saying is if you juxtapose the person who is out of a job and out of luck with the individual who might be running a multi-million-dollar corporation, and you have a legislator in the middle who is proposing that the person who is out of luck and out of a job, that they should get drug tested because they are receiving government subsidies. And then you don't apply that same standard to individuals who might be doing the same thing, who might be getting drugs, who might be buying drugs. Well, let me finish.
Right.
Who might be buying drugs. Whether or not that person is buying it out of his own pocket, I don't know. What I'm saying is I want parity. I want equity. I want the same standards applied. If we're going to subsidize this individual, we need to make sure that he is following the same rules as the other individual who might be down on their luck. I don't see the difficulty in that.
Well, I certainly do. I see the difficulty, the difference between I'm paying into the government or the government is paying someone else my money.
So do you think that, let's say, Joe Millionaire, who again had subsidies, we found out that he was on the bus and he was dealing with a hooker, okay?
Okay.
Okay, do you think that his company deserves to continue to be funded by our government? If there is subsidies and tax breaks,
Let me clarify.
If, for instance, that company is receiving some type of a subsidy from the government, and I keep going back to tax breaks, but there are various different types of subsidies that occur, subsidies for expansion, if you will, those kinds of things.
Right.
Do you think that individual's company deserve to continue going if the leadership of that company is engaged in salacious behavior?
Yeah.
Well, that's your belief.
Yeah. I'm not paying for it. Again,
Henry, if the taxpayers, through whatever department is in Washington, D.C., is writing a $200 million check for a company that perhaps might be earning $2 trillion a year, but that check that the taxpayers are writing, you think that that company deserves to continue to be funded, particularly with the leadership that's in place?
All right, let's take an example. Do we have enough time?
Yeah, we got 4 more minutes.
Okay, let's take an example. General Motors.
Yeah.
General Motors the other day sold off the rest of its stock. When it was all said and done, the government had lost Detroit and spent $10 billion loser. That's what they came out with. $10 billion was the cost of trying to bail out General Motors, not including the loss of Detroit. Because when they bailed out General Motors, they dumped a bunch of money in Detroit. That obviously is all lost. Detroit is totally gone. General Motors is $10 billion in bankruptcy. And if the president of General Motors had gone out and he was paying all these bills and all this stuff and he got a hooker, I really don't think it's any of my business. Okay? I honestly don't.
Well, the only thing that, you know, in terms of that story,
Elliot Spitzer, I don't care.
Well, I am thankful that 1.5 million jobs were saved as a result of that bailout.
They were.
Listen, I was watching the S&P the other day, and it indicated that there was 1.5 million jobs that were saved. And we're not even talking about the ancillary jobs, those that surround, like the supply chain and all those.
Detroit City.
Listen, Detroit is a whole other story. That's a whole other story that, you know, that deserves another hour in terms of discussing.
That's what happens when unions get in charge.
Well, and listen, I am thankful that at the very least 1.5 million jobs in terms of GM itself, I'm thankful that those jobs were saved. Now, the machinations that took place regarding the funding and the bailout, I don't know. All I know is folks are now able to feed their families, and I'm thankful for that. And we only got a few minutes left in the show. Any thoughts, huh? What's going on in your world?
Well, I'll tell you. My daughter is graduating from Coastal Carolina University.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm really proud of her. Really proud of her. She's had some problems, but she's gotten through. She graduated very high. She's leaving for New York City, and she's going to work for a big company in New York, and it's very good. She's had some real problems, and I'm glad to see her coming along.
Absolutely. That's wonderful.
And my son, who is also a graduate, he has a degree in business and in economics. He's going to help take her up there. So
wow,
it's going to be a fun trip for him.
Proud dad.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I am.
Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, since we differ politically on a host of issues, but we are able to maintain our friendship and we're not vitriolic in our disagreements. How could we bring that kind of discussion to our political system in the country? What should we be doing to foster that kind of atmosphere in an environment?
I think the first thing that we have to do is people have to listen.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem is so many people go in with their views and they have cultivated their views and they put them almost in a shell.
Yeah.
And with the diversity of this country, with the liberals and the conservatives and everybody being in a shell, there's no discourse, there's no communication, and it always turns into a fight. I don't understand why both sides look. The liberal, you got to understand, from the conservative side, the liberal side is really, they want to help people, and the hardest thing is to say no, we don't want to help people, because we do. But the thing is the cost, the incompetence is just so out of control. And this is what the conservatives yell about, the cost of doing anything through this government.
Well, I do think that what liberals and progressives as myself, one of the things that we absolutely abhor is the selfish individualism coming from conservatives. I mean, I understand cost controls. I really understand that. And we should rein in our costs. But at the same time, we need to be sensitive to the issues that are impacting people on a daily basis. And what I see from the Rush Limbaughs and the Glenn Becks and the Michelle Bachmans and all those folks and Sarah Palin is this vitriol, this hatred that they have for liberals or progressives and even the president. And I think that they can advance an argument without being so hateful. And if we're going to take away anything this holiday season, is that we don't necessarily have to be hateful. We can have our opinions. We can have our perspective, but we don't have to be hateful about it. That's what I want. I want to see a difference in that.
I would like to see that, too.
We got 30 seconds left in the show.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think the main thing that the Conservative Party must do is constantly bring up the cost.
And yeah, bring up the cost, but also be sensitive.
Yeah.
Amen. Well, Henry, thank you so much for coming in this morning to talk about these very important issues. I'm sorry I called you at the last minute, but I am glad that you came.
That's okay. I'm glad to be here anytime.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I want to again thank my friend Henry Hollingshead for coming into the studio at the last minute to talk about some very important issues. In the spirit of the Christmas holiday, we're going to be delving into some of the emotional issues that surround the holiday season, domestic violence, and of course how folks are grappling with a sense of loss, particularly of their loved ones during the holiday season. And of course, there are many people who are dealing with homelessness and hunger. longer. So we're going to be talking about those very important issues in the next couple of weeks. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. This show will be available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.